Oh, it's bad. It's really bad.
How bad is it?
It is so bad that it is... Well, they gave up 600 yards last week against the Houston Texans. They have allowed the second most points per game behind only the awful Miami Dolphins. They're 30th in third down defense. They've allowed 24 plays of 20 or more yards so far this season. They've given up their 30th in first downs allowed. They've got just 5 sacks as a team. Deshaun Watson has been a human punching bag all year long, got touched only one time. I'm talking about the Atlanta Falcons defense in town this weekend against the Arizona Cardinals. And the question, the wonder, is this the week where all of those yards that we've seen out of the Cardinals offense, the fact that they've almost 2-1 over where they were this time a year ago in terms of yards they've produced, is this the week yards equal points? And Kyler Murray and the Cardinals offense busts out big time. That's the question.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. I mean, part of what helped the Falcons defense in previous years was that the offense was so good that they would have these long, methodical drives, and the defense got a long time to rest because they would go up and down the field, and their offense was so dynamic and so good, and they could run the ball too. So they would really just take up chunks of 6, 7, 8 minutes, 9 minutes, big 10 play drives, 11 play drives. And so the defense really benefited from that. And this year, the offense has put up good numbers, but not the points and not the drives that we've talked about in the past. So the defense has really been exposed. Ever since the second half of that Super Bowl against New England, this defense has been exposed. That wasn't a great defense. They just got hot during the playoffs, and then the first half of the Super Bowl fell apart in the second half. Yeah, I would think that this is the week that the Cardinals offense could have a little bit more of that red zone success because this defense is really bad. And I think they may, in order to stay in this game, because I'm expecting Falcons to score a lot of points, mm-hmm. I think they've got no choice. They're going to have to.
Yeah, that to me is the question. Are the Cardinals equipped to participate in a shootout? You know, can they keep up in a shootout? Because I have a feeling this weekend's going to be a shootout. Are the Cardinals ready to participate in a shootout? I know they've got the... we'll see about Kirk, we'll see about David Johnson. Those two guys will have a big role in this. But based off of their ability to move the ball, 514 yards a week ago, the way they ran the ball, I know they've got the yards in them. Do they have the points in them to keep up in a shootout with the Atlanta Falcons?
So far, the answer's been no because of the problems in the red zone. What were they last week in the red zone? 1-for-6?
1-for-6.
1-for-6 in the red zone.
They're 30th in the league right now in red zone percentage.
You're not getting into a shootout going 1-for-6 in the red zone. You're getting into a shootout going 4 or 5 for 6 in the red zone, but you're not getting into a shootout going 2 for 6 in the red zone. I mean, it's got to be much better. I mean, it's got to be a drastic improvement. They got to score. Almost every time you get down, you got to score. If you're going to get in a shootout,
yeah,
you score 4 times in the red zone, that's 28 points. You kick 2 field goals, that's 34. You know, you can win a shootout that way, but you can't win a shootout scoring 14 points on touchdowns. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, this is the game. I'm stating the obvious here, but this is the game where if you have a high number of 20 or so yard field goals, you will lose.
You will lose.
If you're in the 20-somethings all day with your field goals, if Zane Gonzalez good from 23, Zane Gonzalez good from 26, you're going to lose. You're going to lose this game. I know against this defense, Atlanta is going to be able to score some points. I know it. I know it. I know it.
Listen, the one thing we don't know, are they playing for Dan Quinn? Are they reading the storylines? Do they see that this guy is going to get fired? I mean, ESPN did a story, top 6 playoff failure teams. The Falcons are right there. Preseason playoff chance, 40.5%. Current playoff chances, 3.5%. They've had an epic collapse in the beginning of the season. Defensive side of the ball has been a big part of that, and Dan Quinn, what's the mindset of a team that was supposed to contend for a playoff spot, be a playoff contender, that's probably out of it by now? You know, you just don't know, right? You don't know the human nature of it. Do the guys like Dan Quinn? Are they going to play hard for him? Are they giving up on him? I mean, that part you just don't know.
Yeah, no, you don't. Now, Dan Quinn has been very adamant all week long that he is not going to step away from defensive play calling duties, that he is the defensive coordinator of this team, and that even though it's not about his ego over the team, he still believes he is very much best equipped to get this defense out of their funk. I'll tell you, other than Dan Quinn, the guys who are getting the most heat in Atlanta, just from all the stuff that I've read,
are their defensive ends, Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley.
Well, Beasley they paid some money to, too.
$13 million. He's hit the quarterback five times so far this year. He's been a shell of himself. Tack McKinley hasn't been very good either. Grady Jarrett up the middle has actually been Pro Football Focus's best graded interior defensive lineman in the NFL so far this year. That's saying something, at least when it comes to rushing the passer. That's absolutely saying something right there. But Cliff Kingsbury, earlier today, actually this is from yesterday, talked about Dan Quinn's defense and said it's kind of similar to Seattle.
It is. You can definitely see that that's where it stems from. They're mixing up coverages a little bit more just like Seattle is, but he's a tremendous defensive mind. I first went against him when I was at Texas A&M. He was at Florida and have always been impressed by him since that game. Just the way he carried himself, you see the interactions with the players, you just notice things like that, and he's had a heck of a run.
But you're right, this is coming down to red zone opportunities for the Cardinals and whether they can convert on them, and that's something Cliff Kingsbury talked about yesterday. Would the record be different if the red zone touchdown rate was a little bit better?
We're well below average, and so I try not to look back on record, but I just like looking at what it can be. I'm a half glass half full guy and where it can go. And so that's how I've approached that, is if we're at whatever 30% scoring touchdowns in the red zone, league average 55, if we can get up to 60 on this back half of the season, then we're rolling. And I think our team understands that.
Boy, league average is 55 and they're at 30.
Think about that.
Oof.
I think it's
bad.
I think it's very fair to wonder that if they're even league average red zone conversions in the touchdowns, they've got at least one more win. At least one more.
Well, yeah, because some of those games, the Detroit game was an overtime game, the Baltimore game was a close game. For a while, the Carolina game was, maybe a touchdown keeps you in it. Yeah, things could have changed, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you could do the what-ifs all day long, right? What if they had Patrick Peterson? What if they had Robert Alford? But the red zone thing, I mean, that's they control that, right? They can't. Yes. They don't control Patrick Peterson.
That's a great point.
They don't control that.
And that's exactly it. You worry about the things you can control. You can't control that Robert Alford broke his leg.
Can't control
you
it.
You can't control that Patrick Peterson took some illegal substance and is out for you. You can control
your failures in the red zone.
Your failures in the red zone. And you can do a better job. Now, what was interesting this week, looking at their failures in the red zone, there was all this clamoring. You got to run the ball more. They did. Against the Bengals, they did run the ball more in the red zone. I believe seven times they ran it, compared to five times they passed it in the red zone. And you still didn't have the kind of success that you were looking for. So this is, if you can get to league average with the offense and the way they're moving the ball this year, you're going to score some points.
Well, then you can win games like this.
Yes.
And the Giants game. Like, you'll win those games if you could do it better. If you can get to 55, 60% in the red zone, because they get in there plenty of times, they're just not converting. And listen, a lot of it just comes down to play calling, right? Isn't it just, you know, like, it's play calling. Like, they're able to move the ball up and down the field 20-20. So what is wrong with the play calling in the red zone? What are they not doing right? And that's what Kingsbury's got to figure that out. It's his playbook. What do you need to have more success than he said? We're at 30%. League average is 55. If we can get to 60, okay, you got to double your output to get to 60%. You're doing 30.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to do a better job of play calling.
Yeah. Here's what he said about that.
It starts with me, play design, play concepts, and then things just tighten up overall as an offense. All of us coaches and players, the windows get tighter. Execution has to be tighter. Base alignments, all the details. I think we're getting down there a bunch, and our focus has to increase. And I think that's a learned behavior for all of us. And once we all get on the same page, I expect it to get better.
Well, look, let's be honest about this, too. Some of this is when you've got a 3rd-and-11 pass, perfect back shoulder pass to Keyshawn Johnson, he's got to hold on to the ball. When Kyler Murray is going to target Trent Sherfield in the end zone on a back shoulder pass, a better throw, and you've scored a touchdown instead of kicking a 22-yard field goal. I mean,
but those are only one play. Because you could say, okay, why were you in 3rd-and-11? You know, why wasn't it 3rd-and-3? We could have a better, more higher success rate on a play. Then 3rd-and-11 is a very difficult play to.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, that's, you know, there are those individual plays, and you're right. There's definitely a whole bunch of those individual plays. But overall, I mean, when you get into the red zone, you know, what are you doing on first down? What are you doing on second down? What are you doing on third down? It's all of the downs.
Arizona Sports wants you to blitz the bayou and win an all-expenses-paid trip for two to New Orleans. So watch some football, eat some gumbo, go along with the Bird Gang Travel Club. So here's what you do. Text the word BLITZ to 62620 for your chance to win. Again, that's BLITZ to 620-620. BLITZ the bayou. It's brought to you by Pepsi. We've already seen the best team in the National League get bounced. Is the best team in the American League about to do the same? It's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. The baseball season is a long one, 162 games. There's no small sample sizes. If you are the best team over 162 games, you're the best team, right?
Yep, 100%.
Get to a five-game series, and things just go nuts.
That's why I love the five-game series.
It lends itself to absolute craziness, right? So, and we saw it last night. Now, again, not to be disrespectful to the Nationals. From Memorial Day on, they had just as good a record in the National League as the LA Dodgers did. They were on fire from basically
May 20, 31 to start the season.
They were.
And Davey Martinez's job was on the line. They were 18-31.
And from that moment on, they went on a tear where only the Dodgers had as good a record in the National League as they did from Memorial Day on. So it's not like the Dodgers, it's not like the Nationals are some 81-win team that won the second wild card during a down year and managed to get hot. No, they're good. They're talented. The same can be said for tonight's American League Divisional Series Game 5 between the Houston Astros and the Tampa Rays. The Astros over 162 games were by far the best team in baseball. By a run differential of 280, they demolish teams. You get in a best of five, and it doesn't matter.
Sure.
It doesn't matter.
Now, this is the thing I love about this game tonight. Ready? For the Rays to win this series, they will have beaten Zach Greinke, Justin Verlander, and Gerrit Cole in back-to-back-to-back games. Think about that. Greinke, Verlander, Cole in back-to-back-to-back games. How many times that happened this season? Since they traded for Greinke? None. The answer is none. They've never lost three games in a row in that span. In that whole span, they've never lost three games in a row. Just the odds of beating Verlander and Cole, this is crazy. Listen to this. To beat Verlander and Cole back-to-back, it's grim. The two of them started 30 times since the All-Star break. They're 26-4 in those games. So a team that played at that pace all season would win 140 games and lose 22. 140 and 22 over 162 games. Just the ability to beat Verlander and Cole in back-to-back games. It just doesn't happen. Now, Tampa's got, like, they've got Glasnow starting, but they got Morton available in relief. They got Blake Snell available in relief.
No doubt.
They won the bullpen game the other day, and now, you know, what do they got to lose, right? They should be loose. Listen, it's Gerrit Cole. He struck out 15, but he's human, okay? You get a couple of runs, you just never know.
I don't know. Is Gerrit Cole, in fact, human? I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure Gerrit Cole is, in fact, human based off of the numbers I saw today since May 22nd. He's 17-0 with a 1.69 ERA and 241 strikeouts.
All right, he's a machine.
14 Ks per nine inning. He's a cyborg sent from the future to destroy us all. He's not a human being. Gerrit Cole is a freak of human nature.
Maybe the race of Sarah Connor.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
Maybe. With the trailers for that look really
good. I'm totally going to watch
it. Oh, that looks, now that she's back in the loop. Oh, yeah, that looks pretty good. 17-0. 1.69 ERA, 241 strikeouts, 14 Ks per nine inning for Gerrit Cole.
Now, I could counter that.
Go for it.
241 batting average, 294 slugging, 133 at bats, 13 runs total, 6 came in game one. The Astros they're not scoring.
No.
Their offense has disappeared.
Yeah.
So Cole could maybe give up one run and maybe it's a 1-1 game, a 2-1, like you just don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. The Astros offense has really struggled in this series. Really struggled. Now, maybe they break out tonight, but so far, they're not. It's not a great offense.
A.J. Hinch said yesterday he's excited about the opportunity.
You know, the pressure tomorrow is awesome, and it's on both of us. And who's going to be able to get the lead? Who's going to be able to get out of the gate and kind of take control of the game? They're going to want to take our crowd out of it. We're going to want them to be loud as hell. That's the fun part of your prep going into the game. And how long does Glasnow go? I don't know. When will Snell get up? At some point. When do they go to the Castillo and Anderson and the same crew that they've done? I mean, that's how they've won, and it's how they usually win. We are well prepared to audible when we need to, and we know who they're gonna bring who in against us.
I have so much respect for AJ Hinch. He is dead flat wrong when he said there is pressure on both of these teams. No, there's not. There's pressure on your team.
It will be
immeasurable pressure on your team.
It will be probably the biggest upset in one of the biggest upsets in baseball history. I won't say the biggest. The Pirates beat the Yankees in 1960. Mazeroski's home run. That was a gigantic upset. The Yankees outscored them by like 10 runs a game, I think, and the Pirates won a damn World Series. Mazeroski in Game 7 over Berra in left field. but it will be one of the greatest upsets in baseball. And even though the Rays won 90-something games, this Astros team, with those three pitchers, beat them before even the ALCS?
Yeah.
Huge upset.
We were talking, there was a story written before the postseason started, about whether the Astros were the best postseason roster ever assembled. The best postseason roster ever put together. Yeah, it'd be, and that's why I AJ's a really intelligent guy, and I think that's his way of trying to apply equal amounts of pressure on the Rays that are on the Astros. Oh, there's pressure on both teams. No, there's not.
You remember,
there's no pressure on the Rays, even though they won 97 games. There is no, they've got you game five in a 2-2 series. There's no pressure
loose.
On them.
They should be loose.
You guys have every reason to come out and play tight, because you know if you lose this, man, the questions are going to be fast and furious about how a plus 280 run differential team could lose to the Tampa Bay Rays in a best of five series. There's so much more pressure on Houston than there
Mets
is on Tampa.
Mets and the Orioles in 69. Remember the Reds against McGuire and Canseco in the World Series?
Of course.
With Billy Hatcher, Arizona product. That Reds team was never supposed to win that World Series. I think did they sweep them?
They did sweep them.
They swept them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were never even supposed to be in that World Series. They were supposed to get swept, and they ended up sweeping the A's.
Look, if this postseason, if it's anything like it was last night, here the funny part about this is that no matter who wins tonight's game, the American League has home field advantage in the World Series. Both of the teams in the National League have worse records than any of the three teams left in the American League. The Rays have
so it'll either be in Houston, Tampa, or
New York. We'll have home field advantage in the World Series when it comes to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean,
I always say that to point out the Rays, to their credit,
they won a lot of games.
97 wins in that division. I know, right. Boston had a down year. 97 wins in that division. Yeah. It's nothing to sneeze at.
No.
It's nothing to sneeze at, but they're not the Astros, and they don't have the same kind of pressure the Astros.
Yeah, with their payroll. I mean, come on. With their payroll, what they've done.
Oh, here's you mentioned the three starters.
Yeah.
Greinke, Verlander, and Cole combined, $76 million. The Rays 25-man payroll combined,
$64 million.
All 25 of them are making $12, $13 million a year less than just the three aces are for Houston. Yeah. There's more pressure.
Well, listen, I think the Astros are still going to be good, but once they lose Cole, I mean, Verlander's another year older next year. At some point, he's like going to be 38 next year, I think. Well, or at least 37. And then, you know, Granke's old, so you're going with two old guys, two guys that are both over, you know, the 36 and over, with Cole gone, because I don't think Houston can afford Cole, but we'll see. So if Cole leaves, I mean, they may be looking at this as, look, this is our last hurrah.
Maybe.
I don't know what their pitching staff's going to look like next year.
I mean, their position players are all
young and
still
good.
Very much so. I mean,
and the Yankees win without great starting pitching.
They'll have to reinvest if they do lose Cole. The question, I know we're a couple months away from finding out, how much is Garrett Cole going to get this offseason? How much is he going to get paid? Because there aren't
$200 million?
I would assume somewhere around
my
there.
Guess, $200 million.
Who gives it to him? Do the Dodgers give it to him? Do the Dodgers finally break rank and go spend a lot of money in free agency, given the disappointment of how these seven consecutive division titles have ended?
You don't think the $13 million they gave A.J. Pollock was a lot of money this year?
Well,
they gave A.J. like $50 million right?
Look, A.J. was money, but it wasn't the high end of the free agent store.
No.
It wasn't Manny Machado, Bryce Harperville, right? I mean, it was money, but it wasn't.
I mean, but in some way, I mean, pitching is different, I think. If you can get pitching, you get pitching.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper proved, like, Washington lost Bryce Harper, and they're in the NLCS. Philly got Bryce Harper. They didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, they fired their manager today.
Right.
Washington State's going to come to Tempe with one of the most high-powered offenses in the country. Does ASU have the defense to slow Mike Leach down? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. It's 12:30 Saturday, Sun Devil Stadium. We haven't seen him in action in a couple of weeks. We're looking forward to 18th-ranked ASU taking on Washington State, and hopefully we'll be accusation-free with ASU taking on Washington State.
Oh, you going back to the stealing of the signs?
Oh, of course. I could never forget about something like that. I mean, I can forgive, but I will never forget.
Your goal is to make Mike Leach call his players fat, dumb, and
entitled.
Entitled. That's well, after the game.
Our next guest is skinny, intelligent, and humble as can be.
Yeah.
He is Chris Cartman from SunDevilSource.com. He is not fat, dumb, nor entitled, and he joins us here in the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline. It's the nicest thing a guy could say about a guy, isn't it, Chris?
What a nice intro. I really appreciate that. I was going to say, I mean, the only indictment that might come on Saturday is from Leach if his players lose the third straight Pac-12 game.
Yeah, yeah, that might speak volumes and be more than enough. This is a really interesting matchup, given that it looks at least on paper like strength versus strength. ASU's defense, Washington State's offense. This is going to be a tough task for that defense, isn't it?
I've been fascinated to see this one. I think we're going to see ASU do some things that it hasn't all year, or really even since Herm Edwards arrived in Tempe. What we saw is Utah had a lot of success against Washington State by putting a sixth defensive back on the field. That allowed it to disguise its coverages a little bit more. The previous opponents, UCLA and Houston, both showed a lot of just man-free coverage or even cover zero against Washington State's tendency to put five receivers in motion. The only way that you can really combat that is if you take a linebacker or a defensive lineman off the field. And Utah did it. It worked really well. The Cougars have a great quarterback, but he's a first-year player who hasn't probably seen anything like that before. And I think that he was confused at times where some guys would be, the type of coverage. They were able to be in a cover two shell and play some man underneath of it. So even though he completed a lot of balls, it was only 250 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. Now, on the downside is they know that opponents are going to probably deploy this type of a strategy, given that it was so successful for the Utes, and they have a bye week on top of that. So they'll be a little bit prepared, but they won't have seen ASU do its own version of that type of defense.
You know, the question we have is just, you know, can ASU, with Jaden Daniels being so young and them not being a high-scoring team right now, they're winning a lot of close football games, you know, can they score enough points? If Washington State is going to score offensively and have one of the best offenses in the country, can ASU keep up? Now, Washington State, new defensive coordinator, changes at that position. They've changed a lot of their secondary guys around. So does ASU have the talent offensively to keep up?
Well, I think that's why it's important that ASU try to control the pace and the style of the game, right? Because if you get the ball rolling downhill for the Cougars, they're going to be really hard to beat. So Herm Edwards is, you know, he's very comfortable with you know, being a little bit more conservative, making the Cougars sustain drives and not be able to get some of these big plays. Now, I will say, to your point, the Cougars have been pretty bad on defense, and obviously especially against UCLA when they deconstructed from down up 32 points and losing the game. But their defensive backs have been poor. They had a really tough time regardless of whether they played zone or man. They've tried to be aggressive because they don't have the type of talent up front to impact the quarterback. And they haven't handled five wide well whatsoever, which we've seen ASU do pretty effectively in the last couple of games. And on top of that, they've got some of their gap scheme runs going. So I actually do think that ASU can score 30-some-odd points in this game, and that's important because it might need it.
Chris Cartman from SunDevilSource.com, the publisher of SunDevilSource.com. He's our guest here on Burns and Gambo Show. ASU versus Washington State coming up on Saturday afternoon at 12:30. Let's talk about Eno Benjamin and if it is going to be a game of keep away or putting some points on the board. His effort against Cal was maybe one of the single best efforts I've seen out of him or any real recent ASU running back in memory. He was just a man-child out there with his ability to take punishment. But I know the yards per carry, it hasn't been great. What is a breakout game coming for him statistically this year, or are we just not going to see that this season out of Eno?
I do think that he'll make a step in that direction this game. People kind of need to remember last year, it was the fourth game against Washington that they got some of their gap scheme runs going as their offensive line settled in. And then the fifth game against Oregon State that he had 300 yards. The Cougars aren't very good. And there's an opportunity in this game for Benjamin to probably rush for well over 100 yards and also be an impact in the passing game, because UCLA had a 95-yard touchdown to its back. And then we also saw last week Utah have a touchdown with its running back out of the backfield. They haven't covered those back routes very effectively. So I think he'll be a high carry guy again. That's his MO. I mean, he's a workhorse like nobody else probably in the Pac-12. He's amazingly durable. And I also think that the way that some of these gap scheme runs are setting up for them, they got a chance to probably get into a better rhythm than they have at any point in the season to this point.
Chris, it seemed odd to me that Brandon Ruiz announced that he was transferring. To me, that kind of came out of left field. So two-part, like, one, were you caught by surprise with it? And two, is there enough confidence in Zendejas? He did miss the two field goals last time out, and he might have some struggles with some of the distance. Is there confidence that he could be the guy going forward?
Yeah, I wasn't totally surprised. I felt like there was something brewing behind the scenes there. I had heard that he was cleared to play for Colorado, the previous home game. He had taken and looked pretty good on some 50-yard kicks in warmups and was doing full field kickoffs. And then for whatever reason, he went and put pads on, and then he missed a couple shorter field goals, and it was kind of odd. And he said that, you know, maybe he tweaked something, but you know, there's a lot of talk behind the scenes that people around him only wanted him to play if he was getting full season opportunities because he was trying to go for the Groza. And ASU, meanwhile, was saying that, hey, you're our best kicker, so we can't afford to redshirt you just because you've had this injury to start the season, which was a groin injury and legitimately kept him out of the first few games. And I think that kind of disagreement spiraled into where people were a little accusatory. I do think that Zendejas is very accurate from inside 40 to 45 yards, and especially at home, but his leg is not nearly as good. And I think that's a factor when you get into some longer range opportunities.
I mean, isn't that really selfish of Ruiz to put his own personal gains ahead of that of the team's when the team's off to a good start?
Well, I do think so. And I reached out to Reese and I asked him some questions, and he kind of he filibustered on me a little bit and didn't give me really clear answers. And then ultimately he got off the phone, and I've given him and his family and other people around him an opportunity to try to convey their side of the story, but they haven't refuted any of it. And it's from enough places that I do believe that that he was, you know, his self motivations we're taking the priority in the situation, and that can't happen.
Yeah, the good stuff, as always, is it's the kind of stuff we've come to count on you over there at sundevilsource.com. So thanks for coming on for a few minutes, Chris. We appreciate it. Enjoy the game this weekend. I know we'll talk to you real soon.
Day game. Going to be awesome. Thank you.
You better believe it. That's Chris Cartman joining us on from sundevilsource.com on the Colter Automotive Group Sports Line, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti in Gambo. This is a good time to remind everybody that you can get lower-level tickets for that game this weekend for $19.87. 18th-ranked AESU hosting Washington State. Text the word DEVILS to 620-620. We will send you a link to purchase tickets.
Under $20 for a lower-level ticket for the game.
Cannot beat
under
that.
$20, lower level.
DEVILS to 620-620, the Arizona Sports Sun Devil Special. Text DEVILS to 620-620. For your opportunity to get in on that.
Good opportunity to get yourself a great ticket for the game at a low price.
We've said it 100 times around here. We have a love-hate relationship with the folks at Pro Football Focus. Sometimes we love them, sometimes we hate them. Their latest batch of Cardinals ratings produced some surprising results. We'll share them with you next on the Burns and Gambo Show. So, 2 weeks ago, Gambo says, offensive line for the Arizona Cardinals is better. And we went, okay. Vinny Murata called you out. I think he called you a liar on the air, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Did he say a liar?
No, I'm kidding. I'm just trying to start a fight between you and Vinny. No, I don't think he, in fact, called you a liar. But if it makes you want to call Vinny names in exchange so we can start a little skirmish, that'd be fine, too.
Well, it's good today. Like, they had some pizza on us. Bickley and Murata were happy.
So 2 weeks ago, you say offensive line has improved, and people were skeptical. Then we saw the win against the Bengals.
I don't believe you.
In which they clearly played better.
Yep.
Yesterday, Mark Schlereth was on with Bickley Marotta and said, yeah, absolutely, they're playing much better, which is hard to do because in this offense, it's hard for an offensive lineman in this system to look good, and yet they are looking better.
He said that.
So here is the third piece of the trifecta here. We got Gambo, we got Mark Schlereth, and now we've got, of all people, of all organizations, Pro Football Focus. I was reading their preview of the Falcons-Cardinals game this week, and they were writing about Grady Jarrett, who's the defensive tackle for the Atlanta Falcons, and how he's one of the few bright spots, leads all interior defensive linemen in pass rushing grade in the Pro Football Focus.
I'm like, said having to go up against this Cardinals dominant offensive line is going to... No, I'm teasing.
Well, that's close.
I don't know what they said. You're going to have to fill me in here.
Got to read your emails that I send you. Jarrett will face a tough test against Arizona's interior offensive line on Sunday. Yes, you read that correctly. The Cards' interior offensive line has actually come out of the gates on fire. Guards Justin Pugh and J.R. Sweezy have both earned 74-plus pass blocking grade so far this year, and center A.Q. Shipley is right there with them with his 74 pass blocking grade through week 5. See, I thought you were being deliberately obtuse. You, in fact, had not read my email this morning.
I read a lot of your email.
All of this in the email, and you're like, what did they say?
I have no idea. Baseball stuff more than the other. I did because I went over some of the
stuff.
You
were more excited about the Dodgers stuff than you were.
I really was. I really was.
So we got Gambo, we got Schlereth, and we've got now Pro Football Focus. Jarrett will face a tough test against the Arizona interior offensive line on Sunday. I'll take
these guys are all a little late to the party. Come on, we were all over that. The Cardinals offensive line is much improved.
It's much improved.
What are we going to take for 40? For 100?
I was going to take phrases that I never thought I'd read in print for $400.
I know.
Yeah, I was going to go Jeopardy on you. Yes.
I think because of the sacks, right? I think it's because of the sacks. But the reality is that the offensive line, the continuity the offensive line has, the fact that Murray has not taken any sacks that he has not seen. They actually, this is pretty good. Here's a number I got that the Cardinals are in quarterback hurries allowed. Their offensive line is seventh best in the National Football League in hurries allowed. What does that mean? That means the sacks are more on the quarterback holding onto the ball too long. They're more on the running backs because they are not giving up the hurries. Seventh best in the National Football League in hurries allowed by the offensive line. So the quarterback's not getting hurried a whole lot.
Some good trash right there. That's some good numbers.
It is. Like I've been seeing the trend here for a while now with the offensive line. And we've talked about how Murray has seen every sack coming he's been able to see. He hasn't had a blindsided sack. But nationally, the Cardinals have given up this many sacks. Their offensive line is trash. I know that you're not watching the game. Like, I watched these now. You didn't watch the game. Like, you're just looking at a stat sheet.
Sure.
I know you didn't watch.
And you're just looking at one number. Listen, you're looking at sacks.
And I don't blame you because you're a national guy and you can't watch every single NFL game. I get it. So Monday morning when you've got to do your show and you've got to comment on the Cardinals, the only thing you're looking at is a box score, dude. I know it. I know you are because I could see right through you. You didn't watch the game. You got some stats in front of you and you're going to just... The Cardinals offensive line sucks because they've given up this many sacks. Wrong. It's improved. Now, I'm not saying it's a top 10 offensive line or anything.
No.
I'm just saying it is much improved.
We're so used to it being so bad around here. And there's a number of reasons why, all right? And some of which we talked about earlier this week, but we'll kind of go over again. Reason number one, we talked about the continuity. So far, okay, right tackle's been a revolving door, and it probably will continue to be most of the year. The Marcus Gilbert injury probably shouldn't have caught them off guard, but between that and Jordan Mills, it's been a little rough over there on the right side. But the other four of them have played virtually the entire season. We were talking about this pre-show, too, when it comes to the offensive line. There are some holdovers from last year, but think about it this way. In some ways, there are some new guys on that offensive line. A.Q. Shipley didn't play at all last year. So, in essence, him being on that line is like reacquiring a center.
You took a rookie out, a guy who was a rookie last year.
Who was decent.
He was okay.
He was decent.
He was
I said
and
decent.
Right. Okay. And you replaced him with a good veteran, a tough physical veteran player who knows how to read defenses. And like, so it's a big difference.
Sweezy has been a very nice add for them, obviously.
It's probably one of their best free agent pickups.
And Pugh has played well for the money that he's, and more than anything, and I knock on wood when I say this, he's held up. He's held up. And with Justin Pugh, I hate to say it, that's always sort of the one thing we haven't mentioned with that offensive line, and we spent all off season glowing about Sean Coogler. how much of an impact is Sean Kukler having on this offensive line?
Huge.
I mean, we knew he was a rock star when he came here, but people, we tend to look more at the personnel than the coaching they're getting. And the Cardinals offensive linemen, let's be honest, they haven't gotten the greatest of coaching the last several years. Kugler seems to be in a different category.
You had a cut yesterday where Kingsbury was talking about like a running play.
I have it right here.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Do you draw up run plays as often as you do pass plays?
Every now and then, but I'm Coach Kugler and Coach Hyden. They do a big part of that run game, and I'll have ideas. Usually they're like, yeah, that's not going to work in the run game. But I try to dress things up off the run game.
That's the one you were looking for, I assume?
Yeah. They're like, yeah, dude, that's not going to work. He's the head coach. And you get the offensive line coach, yeah, that's not going to work. We're not going to do that. Kugler gets a lot of credit for the running attack being as good as it is, 11th in the National Football League, and the fact that this offensive line is doing a good job of protection. They're doing a good job run blocking and doing a good job pass blocking. Again, not a top 10 offensive line in the NFL. But, man, if you don't see, if you don't see the differences, the difference in this offensive line compared to last year, you're not watching the game.
Yeah.
You're just looking at stat sheets like the national guys.
Plus, they're being very creative about how they're running the football. Cliff Kingsbury yesterday talked about the misdirection that they're using.
I think everybody's been going that direction for quite some time. You see a bunch of these teams that have been successful. College teams have been doing it for quite a while in the Big 12. Lots of those quick motions, and then you see it really getting to the NFL quite a bit. And it just freezes linebackers' eyes, and that's what you're trying to do. If you can hold them for a half second, then that's in this league, that can be a big deal.
And look, this is a small impact and not the impact that we wanted out of him, but this is where Andy Isabella is impacting the Arizona Cardinals offense. On those misdirections, he's money. Because when you see a jet sweep going to Andy Isabella,
yeah,
and
you got to get to the edge,
and
quick.
You know he's a 4.3 40 guy. Based
I
got to
get
would,
there before he gets there.
Yeah, even the mere appearance of the ball possibly going to Andy Isabella in a jet sweep is going to freeze every linebacker's eyes for just a split second, just enough for you to be able to run the play in the direction that you actually want to run it. It's been a nice little weapon for them the last. There was one play last week against the Bengals where they did a fake misdirection to Andy Isabella. They got everybody going to the right, and they ran David Johnson to the left, and I think he gained 17 yards on that play. I mean, it's very, very effective. Isabella hasn't impacted the game we would have liked, but he has in that regard the last couple of
weeks. I think he's going to continue to get some opportunities, and it may be 3 or 4 a game for now, but eventually that's going to increase because the kid can play. What he's got to prove to them more than anything right now is that he can run a pattern, run it well, catch the ball when it's thrown to him. That's what he's got to prove.
By the way, speaking of Pro Football Focus, the highest graded defensive player for the Cardinals last week against the Bengals?
Hassan Reddick?
Rodney Gunter.
Gunter, okay.
89.
Yeah, but he had the penalty on it, special teams.
I know.
They're going to kick a field goal and then where?
89.4.
Rodney Gunter.
Rodney
Good.
Gunter.
Biggest play of the game was Reddick on the 4th and 1.
No doubt. That was the biggest. And he was 4th, by the way. Reddick was 4th behind Bullard, Jones, and Gunter. Join Aaron Maloney in Arizona Sports Saturday. Volkswagen North Scottsdale, 11-1. Giving away Dane Cook tickets, movie passes, much more, plus hosting an adopt-a-dog event in conjunction with Halo Animal Rescue. On-site food truck as well. Head to the events page at arizonasports.com for more details. We'll see you Saturday from 11 to 1, Volkswagen North Scottsdale. Not only did the Dodgers get eliminated from the playoffs last night, it's the way that it all went down that's put a smile on all D-backs fans' face today. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.